Welcome back to the House of Neshama, where I, Isabiza,
and me, Aria Rachel,
are serving up some matzo ball soup for all the fellow wandering Jewish souls out there, and all our other lovely listeners.
In the soup today will be an exploration into non-Jews portraying Jewish characters in film and television.
So if there's any content warning for this episode, non-Jewish feelings may not be spared.
And there may even be some heartbreak for the fellow Jews in learning that some of our most beloved and iconic Jewish characters are actually not played by Jews.
We did some major digging, and you may be shocked who ended up on our list. Some controversial and, well, some we'll let you decide.
Yes, so be sure to stick with us after the break. To dive right into this juicy topic, definitely not a new issue at all, but one particular person brought it up on her podcast, that person being Sarah Silverman.
We love our girl Sarah.
We do love our girl Sarah. Even in the midst of her imperfections, there's still always a love for her. Yeah, she opened up this conversation and kind of pointed out this pattern that she noticed of non-Jews portraying Jews in all kinds of different projects and different genres, and basically, you know, encouraging everyone to challenge it and question it. And she was interviewed on the Howard Stern show where she acknowledged, you know, this isn't the most pressing of Jewish issues, but still something worth noting. And that's why we wanted to present this topic here. Coming from a similar kind of place.
Yeah, and I think that I've seen lots of articles about it, and I think it's starting to resurface, you know, especially when there's, you know, a comedian as famous as Sarah Silverman, like, talking about this brings up these issues that exist, and
yeah,
maybe not like completely issues. It's not like it's like, you know, life or death. I mean, this is Hollywood, this is the movie industry, right? It's definitely like a situation where people are getting paid or they're not getting paid.
Yeah,
you know, that's where it gets a little more controversial, or there's certain portrayals of Jews.
And it's really wild how, I don't know, like, I think some of the examples were Jewish characters I felt really represented by. I felt seen when they showed up on the screen, and to find out, you know, it was portrayed, yeah, by someone who wasn't Jewish, but I guess everyone was kind of maybe deceived that they were. I'm really curious just like how we're gonna, you know, process it in this interview, but also how everyone out there, you know, I think there's a lot of different feelings about it. Some people are like, meh, whatever, it was good. Other people are like really upset, or, you know, there's a lot of different ways, you know, to respond to this stuff. So we're definitely curious how all of you make sense of it.
Yeah. And like, we'll be getting into it more. We did a lot of looking on Wikipedia, looking on different, okay, more, yes, more legitimate websites too. Okay. But
we promise.
We promise. We're going into that uncomfortability, really questioning, you know, the storyline. And also, you know, these people may, like, they might do their part really well. It's like, what are their intentions? Or do we even, can we even access that information?
Right. And if it matters or not, you know, like, for some people, it could matter what happens in their life off screen with their relationship to Jews. And other people, you know, they have their own opinion on that. But to dive into our first example,
Adam Driver, Ariel, super shocking. Like, this was the first time you hearing about this, really, right?
Yeah, I'm still recovering, to be honest.
Our beloved Adam Driver starred in Star Wars, wow, you know, Kylo Ren. And so he ended up in a movie right after that. I mean, not completely right after that, but 2018 in Spike Lee's Black Klansman. The movie earned several awards, and he portrayed a cop. But he was Jewish, and Adam Driver, he may look kind of Jewish in an Ashkenazi way, but he's not.
That nose, baby.
Yeah. So anyway, his character teams up with fellow cop who's black, and they try to infiltrate the Colorado branch of the Ku Klux Klan, and they succeed. So there was a lot of praise for his performance of a Jewish character. There was even a couple scenes where the Jewish American experience, specifically white, Ashkenazi Jewish experience, was kind of touched on. And the main character is, you know, even says to him, you got skin in the game.
Yes.
He doesn't feel like that is enough for him to be persecuted. But I mean, once he gets into the KKK, once he starts meeting the KKK, he realizes, oh, they hate me too. So it's interesting. Yeah, because he's not Jewish. So what do you feel about this?
Oh my God. I have chills thinking of that specific moment. So he talks to Flip and literally like says, you have skin in the game. And what does it mean when a non-Jew, it's just like, there's something very physical and visceral about that. Like something like in your body, like that you have a stake in this. You don't even have to be practicing Judaism in like a religious way. It's just the fact that you will be pegged as a Jew in the eyes of the KKK members. Like, why did that not matter in the casting? If you're going to bring up a quote like that, especially for the fact, the true historical story this is based on, that cop, that white cop, was not Jewish.
Yes. So for my research, there was a whole true story that was behind this. They kind of added the Jewish identity to kind of not make it seem like, you know, a white cop, black cop type of thing, in terms of like characters that don't really like have a, you know, a commonality, kind of like Green Book. Like, I don't think he really wanted it to be like, oh, this person has like, you know, everything and this person doesn't.
A white person with a little bit of flavor, with a little bit of oppression, you know, to make it interesting.
Yeah. And I think it was in genuine intentions.
Yeah.
But I appreciate Spike's inclusion of a Jewish storyline, but I think that, like, you know, and how he did it, maybe there should have been more research, more like consultation with the Jewish community about this, instead of I just want to add this in. And maybe, you know, it is a nod. And I do have to say it is a nod to Jewish culture. I just don't think that it's like the nod that is like very validating. It's like, okay, well, like, you got skin in the game and you're literally like talking to someone who does have like a nose that would be characterized as maybe Ashkenazi. You know, everybody's got all sorts of noses.
His prominent features didn't even make us question.
When I first saw it, I didn't think he was very convincing as someone who, but like, honestly, who is like, what is a Jew? So like, how would you?
Right. But I'm curious, like, for you, why is that? Because I had a very different response.
Well, like, visually, he does look Eastern European.
Right, which can mean anything.
So for me, being a brown Jew, I don't relate with myself in that way. And being a Jew, for me, it's more cultural. It didn't seem convincing as a Jewish character or someone who was insecure because of his Jewish identity. And I think maybe that's because there are points of it where he's basically forced to be uncomfortable because the Klansman points a gun at his face and says, hey, show me your...
Yeah. Oh my God, I forgot about that part. Oh, the lie detector. Yeah, he literally was saying to him, like, you seem a little Jewy. And then he had to say all these awful... This is even more messed up because he had to say actual anti-Semitic things because he had to make it seem like he distanced himself so far. And the whole thing was, right, you're supposed to pass as a non-Jew, but just there has to be something about him that would offset it, you know, to blend in.
So, because, yeah, he's passing, but for the sake of the mission, so it's like he has to keep his composure, but yet he, like, I think he just had never been...
The real-life actor maybe hasn't probably not been in that position before, so it's like, what is he using to channel it?
Yes, a white Jewish man would have most of the privilege, and not maybe he didn't think that he would ever be faced with that, the actual character would ever be faced with that, and now you're witnessing him finally face the fact, oh, I am a minority. I could be in danger, just like my black compatriots.
No, I appreciate hearing just like how you interpreted his representation, because I think for me, I'm settling for crumbs here, you know, because I've never seen a white Jewish character on screen to talk about what it means to be white and Jewish, and that fine line, you know, sometimes between when do you feel you're getting too comfortable, you know, existing within your whiteness in a society like America, and when do you realize even your safety in the eyes of the KKK. it doesn't matter. So that alone, I think that I was so moved by the content, and just to see it, I think, in a Spike Lee film, that meant something to me, and it made me cry. I teared, I think, at that part when his character Flip suddenly realizes like how much he abandoned his Jewish roots. Then again, it's because there's such little representation that will accept, or I've accepted far less than perfect portrayals, because at least it's something.
It's also, people might not know you're Jewish, but like inside you know in your essence that you are. And so it's like a conundrum, you know, dichotomy. Like, it's like, I want to be myself, but also if I myself, I'm in danger. And yet that's also a privilege because I can pass. It's hard to have pride in yourself when you have that ability, because you can't come out sometimes, you know. And I think that the difference between, in Black people, there's like a lot of pride because a lot of people, they can't avoid it. Black and brown people are like, whether Jewish or not, like they have to deal with that, and in doing so be prideful of who they are. And I think that has been a struggle for Jewish people, particularly like, you know, lighter skinned Jewish people. So I think it's important to validate that struggle. No matter who you are, like those specific hate groups will hate you no matter what.
Hi everyone, just a friendly reminder that we now have a newsletter. So if you would like kosher love notes sent from our neshama to your inbox, full of tasty spillover from our episodes and all sorts of Jewish musings, please see our show description below or visit our link tree via Insta to subscribe. All right, back to the episode. All right, so number two on the list is Shiva Baby, which was an example that really took me by surprise, and I think really sparked a lot of, you know, our interests and just different feelings about this topic. But yeah, I know, Issa, you haven't seen it yet, but I've been talking your ear off about it.
Yeah, I've like learned a lot about this movie. I had not been exposed to it before Ariel really talked about it, but it the topics of the film are like very relatable. Like, you know, there's like grief involved, there's like Jewish themes, and yes. I guess, but the casting,
a little bit less Jewish, but I would say, like, in its essence, this film is very unapologetically Jewish. So it made for an interesting example. So, mm-hmm. you know, it is centered around the point of view of Danielle. She's just about to graduate from college. So everyone's like trying to ask her, like, what are you doing with your life? And she's bisexual, and she's, I guess, kind of like a stereotypical Ashkenazi Jewish girl growing up in like the Northeast. I think it was all shot in like New York. But basically, she's at a shiva, you know, after someone dies, and she's there with her parents, and she actually like runs into her sugar daddy. So she's kind of like a sex worker, and also she like bumps into her ex-girlfriend. She's like sitting in the chaos of like being, you know, she studied like gender studies, and the quote was like, they were like, is that a career? She's like, no, it's a lens, like, leave me alone.
It's a lens.
Yeah, and literally, like, what's so fascinating too with this film is that like the score alone has these like horror like strings. So when you see the trailer, you actually think it's a Jewish horror film.
Oh, interesting.
That to be continued on just trying to figure out like that genre alone. But yeah, so it's just like there's a lot going on in this film, but also it all takes place in like the same house. It's literally just one day. It's like, and she starts to like spiral.
Yeah, I feel the like the Jewish anxiety already
everywhere. Yeah,
her character, which I love,
oozing out of it. Yes. You know, this was a big deal. I've never seen, I guess, a bisexual sort of chaotic Jewish girl just be so unapologetically portrayed on screen. So I think this is another example of when I was kind of just so consumed with that I didn't even think to, you know, inquire about the actress or how it was made. You know, I was content. I was happy. Until a lot of people auditioned for this role for Danielle, but the one that really stood out was actress Rachel Sennett. Now, Rachel fooled me, but it turns out she's not Jewish, but she's Italian Catholic. And I was watching a lot of interviews where, like, just watching the dynamic, I think, between the director, Emma Seligman, and Rachel, and they ended up becoming very close. You know, they did the short film, and then 4 years later, they ended up doing the full feature film. I mean, what literally Emma said about Rachel in her audition was that she felt like she knew her. It was just so natural for her, you know, ironically, even though she doesn't share, right, being Jewish, but she said she was able to relate to the character because she came from a big family where there was other types of anxieties, like a lot of questioning and nitpicking about her body size and what she's going to do with her life.
And I think that it takes a lot of money to make these films. So it's kind of like if you have a friend, if you have those might be, you know, the low budget does not allow you to be able to, like, when you start out, yeah, there's less options and you want to have people by you that you trust. So I'm wondering, that kind of fed into the decision to cast her.
For sure. And I think what was really interesting to consider, and I think for fellow emerging or just like storytellers out there, like you almost have to anticipate in sometimes like what would happen if this project that starts as a short film, what happens if it's on a big screen? So I think like what happened in this situation was that Emma was aware, right, of the decision of casting this non-Jew as this, as like the lead Jewish star, right? And so she tried compensating by having everyone else being Jews. And she attempted for the mother, but she's played by a non-Jew as well.
How does this happen? Like, there's so many Jewish actors in New York.
Right? That's the question of the hour. I think she was saying because it's indie, like not everyone's going to want to work on a shoestring budget. You know, she has all these different reasoning.
Wait, so is she the only Jewish person in the production?
No. So she hired a bunch of old theater Jews. The casting director brought them in. So basically like the feel on set, she said, was definitely Jewish vibes. You know, you need that. And there was also just a lot of like bagels and cream cheese everywhere. And like there was a lot of things built into the script that were like unapologetically Jewish. So I think for her, it was more about like the authenticity wasn't limited by like this specific person. And if anything, she did such a good job that it didn't actually take away from what I think a lot of us feel it might if you have someone be a non-Jew in a role that seems like it's important that you channel that insight.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's interesting. I think that, you know, there's like a lot of layers to like these situations because we don't know what really went on.
In the beginning, I would say I was pretty taken back that, you know, this girl actually wasn't Jewish because I was sold.
It's interesting because you described it as sold. You were sold.
Yeah.
Like it was convincing. Like, yeah. It was like, okay, like, your portrayal was good. You put the work into this role, and, you know, you are an actor. So it's kind of like if you put enough work as an actor, I mean, it just works out in all these ways. It doesn't, like, let you go from all the responsibility from taking that role, but it kind of, like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, there's some type of, it's not like you have to prove, oh, this person was good, this person should have had the role, but it's like, okay, well, they were an option that worked out at the end of the day.
Like, yeah, and it didn't take away from the integrity of the work itself, but I would say to kind of take us a little bit more in the direction of another point that Sarah Silverman raised was, you know, this was one example, but what happens when it's a pattern? And specifically looking at like powerful Jewish woman, a big example, we're not going to dig too much into it, but what got really controversial was Midge in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. You know, it's not played by, there's a lot of non-Jews in that cast. And which basically it does track, you know, Mrs. Maisel's evolution from being this like perfect Upper West Side housewife to this like powerful, you know, comedian career woman in the 1950s. And some people feel, you know, it's kind of a gimmicky representation of what it means to be Jewish, you know, relying on all these stereotypes.
Yeah, and you would have to, like, get the voice right, like, growing up in certain neighborhoods. You know, this is not what, you know, what all Jewish people are, but to these people, the type of Jewish is New York Jewish that they're trying to get.
But it's also very specific, right, to a class, to an area, and also, like, and I think, like, what, there's two points here, right? Like, one is these powerful Jewish characters who are really Jewish woman characters who are on these big screens, you know, like so many people watch this show. It's massive. And they see it as a Jewish show, you know? It's like if you talk to the casting directors, why didn't they cast mm-hmm. a Jewish woman to do that? And also the reasoning, when people go, they'll go pretty far lengths once you start pushing back. Like, you know, Rachel, who ended up playing Midge, she grew up in proximity, you know, to the Jewish community outside Chicago. And so a lot of people will make this call for being in proximity to Jews being enough yes. to say that I can do this because I'm married to a Jew. I've grown up with Jews. I went to more bat mitzvahs oh, yes. than any of you would ever imagine. You know, like...
I feel like if you're trying to... Yeah, if you're trying to, like, prove that from your personal life and you're trying to say, well, I fit the role as an actor, I feel like that kind of defeats the point because if you're a really good actor and you can fit the role... You're like, okay, well, I'm able to do this as an actor. But once you bring the personal side of it, then you're just trying to defend yourself with, like, certain associations you have with that community that might not be, like, really close or, you know, it's, like, almost like you're trying to convince people that it's okay, you know.
Right. And I think something that me and you, what we wanted people to take away on that note was just... You know, raising more awareness about like what is an actor doing off screen to actually pay back, you know, to the Jewish community, especially if you're using our trauma, you know, depending on the kind of content we're working with. But, you know, there's been cases where non-Jews also portrayed Jews in Holocaust films. Like, so basically, if you're using our culture and our stories, our pain for entertainment, and you don't think that there's anything that you owe back. So I think that's where we want to bridge that gap because it's not enough to just say that you like Jews and you like bagels and you like us when we're funny. And even then, it's so limited.
Yeah, like if you just like people because they're fun to make fun of or they're fun to like make what we're laughing with you. Like we're laughing with you because you're such a mess. I mean, yes, we can laugh. You know, Joan Rivers was, I mean, she's actually Jewish. Her comedy was to laugh, right? From the pain. There's also some awareness. There's some, when Jewish actors act, they're acting and comedians, they're like also telling a story of like their experience being Jewish. And when it comes from someone who didn't experience that, it's not as meaningful. It'd be really interesting if maybe she did, the person who acted in, you know, Shiva Baby, like if she came out and was like, hey, like, you know, this is what I learned from acting in this role.
Yeah.
And I'm going to share with you what I learned from playing a Jewish woman and talking about the privilege. So that's another thing that maybe you want to get into. She actually didn't talk a lot about playing a Jewish woman, not being a Jewish woman. So.
Yeah. So something interesting when I was looking into a few different interviews, specifically with the director Emma and, you know, the lead Rachel, was that when, you know, there would be these Jewish moderators and they would ask the kind of obvious question at some point in the interview, like, hey, this is a very Jewish film and you are not Jewish, so like what's the deal? Basically what would happen was like, you know, Emma would take, the director who was Jewish, would take over any mm-hmm. Jewish questions. She'd field those questions. So Rachel basically didn't have to say anything, which you could tell they prepped that, you know. And then, but Rachel, her, what she would say, she, and I think I said this before, like, you know, I came from a big yeah. family. And sometimes she'll say, I was from a Catholic, big Catholic family. And then one time I think she said Italian, but she's very vague about it. And she'll just, what she will do, she'll speak to, mm-hmm. which is probably appropriate. I don't know, but how she could connect with the role. And she talked in different interviews about how much she related to the Danielle, the character, even more almost than Emma did from when they were doing the feature film, because it was 4 years later.
It seems like the intentions are like genuine in that way. I think that everybody's so worried about like how everyone's perceived. And so maybe they were thinking that like, oh, it wouldn't be appropriate for her to like, say anything, or maybe like they were worried that they were gonna get, you know, possible like pushback. But I think saying what you learned, being transparent about what you learned, is super important. I feel like not just for being Jewish, just like being transparent about what you take away from something, because when you walk into a space that's not necessarily yours, you're not, you don't have the full story, and you come in there with a humble perspective, which I'm sure she has. She seems like she is coming into it by way of trust and great, you know, she knows there's a big responsibility for this. But I do think that you do have, like, there is something in saying that, I don't belong here and I have to be willing to answer those questions. Because at the end of the day, I am deciding to be in this role. It's not like she was, like, cast and she had no other choice to be casted. Like, I took this role.
Yeah, and she took it over and she did it over again when she did the feature film. But I agree. I think that if you shy away from it, it almost makes it more of an issue. Not just talking about this project. You know, this is a whole industry. It's a whole culture. It's not just the actor that takes on that role. It's not just Adam Driver. You know, it's Spike Lee. It's the producers that signed off on it. It's the producers that won't want to, quote unquote, take a risk on not as widely known Jewish actor to take on that role. Because they know the Jewish stuff will sell, but not the real life Jewish person.
I think it's one of those things where it's like it happened and we have to take, again, we have to be mindful about the places that we take up, how big we, if we have that type of power, what's our duty to really make room for others and to really talk about what space you're taking up, even if you can't help it. You know, sometimes people just, they have these experiences and they can't help being themselves because that's who they are, but that's who they're born into, you know. But you can do something with that.
Well, I would say one example of an interesting example that we wanted to, that made our number three on the list, was the great Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin is, like, if no one knows him, he was at one time the most recognizable person in the world in the early 20th century, famous for his silent films, one of the first celebrities. But he was also a controversial figure. You know, he did have many affairs. Ooh. Yeah, so he was associated with being socialist, and he had many, so he was, mm-hmm. but he was very social justice oriented, along with other actors, started the United Artists. And at times, major studios were, like, taking control of actors' pay stuff and everything, and so they really started that trend of unionizing actors. So basically, he did a lot of these films that were, like, commenting on power structures and, like, fascism and whatever. And one of his last films that he made was called The Great Dictator. And in that film, what we're going to be talking about tonight, he played a Jewish man.
And he is not a Jewish man.
Yeah, he's not a Jewish man. Well, this is the tricky thing, because he was associated with being a Jewish man. Like, there was a lot of propaganda at the time. It wasn't like modern times where people would be like, oh, well, like, to be associated as a Jew, like, that's a cultural experience to be celebrated. Back then, it was people, there's a lot of ignorance, there's a lot of fear in you know, Jews being portrayed, because when they're portrayed, it was propaganda. So the Nazis actually made propaganda content.
Hold on, what year is this?
1940. So he made this in 1939, before any war was declared. And so the reason why I bring up propaganda is that they wrote a whole book basically convincing whatever area that they were in control of at the time that he was Jewish, but he actually wasn't Jewish.
So crazy.
Historically. So in their eyes, he was Jewish, and he did address this many times, but he wasn't super loud about it. He was worried that, like, there's a couple quotes of him being, like, worried that, like, it would come off as anti-Semitic to be like, oh, no, I'm not Jewish. Like, be, like, you know, trying to compensate over that. So Chaplin plays both leading roles, a ruthless fascist dictator and a persecuted Jewish barber, and in the ghetto. And basically, there's a switcheroo where their roles get confused and they're in each other's positions. The dictator, who ends up, like, being carried off to a camp, and the Jewish barber, who looks just like him because somehow they did that in the filming, ends up in the whatever kingdom, not kingdom, where it's some type of wherever dictators live.
Like a fortress. They're dictator fortress. Yeah.
A fortress. And he ended up making this big speech. So I bet people have heard, if people have seen the legendary YouTube clip of Chaplin reciting this really inspiring speech. And that is kind of the premise of the movie. The point of the film was to show that in positions of power, even if you're fearing for your life and you are fearful of your own persecution, you have a duty, you have a service to other people to continue that search for justice for other people. So in that case, him being not Jewish, and he was the director. So it's interesting that he wrote himself in to that storyline, not thinking that anyone else would play it. So that's where the kind of power comes in. I think that he wrote this film as a direct criticism of Hitler.
Yeah.
Not knowing the full extent of everything. They even had I thought this would be interesting for you to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I read this on Wikipedia, and also I converted with other sites too. Later on in his autobiography, right close to when he died, he said that if he didn't know the extent of what was going on in the concentration camps at the time, because no one knew, really.
Right.
He wouldn't have done the film. Like, it wouldn't have happened.
Wait, what? It would be too controversial? Because it would have been too real?
It wouldn't have been able to be released. It would have been a security threat, because he wanted to send it to Hitler. He did not like him that much. He wanted to send it to him as a direct, like, hey, you better think about this. You better think this over.
And guys, this is before YouTube and before email. Like,
apparently he saw it. Apparently Hitler saw it. But like, there's been lots of different sources that have confirmed it. But like,
that's wild.
People would confuse them because they both had the mustaches. And so I think that's something that was funny, but also just like, okay, well, like,
this shit's real. This is some real life. There's real life consequences to this film. And I think something me and you talked about too is like, this film couldn't be made probably, and probably would have a very different reception, of course, in 2022.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the context of this matters so much, because really, this did a service for Jewish people in a way that Jews at the time, that would be very dangerous for them to put their bodies on the line to be in the project like this. So this is like an instance where a non-Jew coming in was almost necessary to make sure that story was told in the way that needed to be, in a way that was bold and brave. And the fact that he didn't outrightly, like you said, like, say if he was Jewish or not. So some people might think that's a little sneaky. But I think I do think it did a service for Jewish people.
And I think like the awareness of what was going on and like you know what the power dynamics between the circumstances of someone who's like a Jewish barber and someone who has like born into a regime and on top, and how they both can be confused and end up with different destinies. But like, it's not what was I gonna say about something about Shiva Baby? It's interesting because like I think he was using his status in the world to kind of show that, and it's in a way it is entertainment. So the thing about it is he was so associated with entertainment. This was honestly, people say that this was his most serious film ever.
Interesting. Because he really did humor, right? Wasn't he known in the comedy space?
Slapstick.
Right.
Slapstick, like walking around, falling down. Obviously, to get the funding for this film, there probably had to be a little bit. I mean, there's like a silliness. There's like a little bit of a playfulness. At times, there's a scene when, I don't know if you've seen the scene where the dictator, played by Chaplin, he throws, there's like a globe, like a balloon.
Yeah.
That's like a world.
Right.
A globe. And he keeps kicking it over, like, he keeps kicking it around the room. And it's supposed to show that, like, oh, he has the power in his hand.
Right.
So there's little silly scenes, but then it goes right back to, like, being serious.
Right, but it's satire.
It's satire. Exactly, it's satire.
Because there was also that film that you mentioned where it was in the 90s. Yes. That was a Holocaust film that people thought was too silly. So I think there's a difference between silliness and caricatures versus, like, I think what we talked about was that in this instance, he's not making jokes about Jewish people. He's making jokes at Hitler. He's trying to disempower this like dictator.
That film Life is Beautiful, it's been forever since I watched it, so me and Amanda are gonna watch it,
and we'll maybe there'll be a newsletter with some reactions to that. But
I grew up thinking that it was a really good movie, and now I'm like, I've been reading a lot of things, and I need to watch it again to kind of see for myself. But yeah, it didn't really. There was a lot of it was criticized for like kind of not taking it seriously enough. I mean,
yeah,
it was about protecting a son. They end up in the concentration camps, and they end up protecting a son from like knowing the realities of what was going on. So there was a lot of games involved. There's a lot of laughing, slapstick.
Yeah.
With the dynamics between the Jews in that film and the Nazis. And by the way, both actors were not Jewish. So
yeah,
main actors who were portrayed to be Jewish concentration camp, you know,
yeah,
prisoners. So it's so comparison is really like good kind of see like who was trying to spread a message. And I think that Chaplin was intentionally wanting a message put out by his film. So, and with that, I think we can kind of like have some lasting thoughts.
That we just want to leave you with, as we said from the top. You know, we have our own opinions and feelings, and we really want to leave it to you to decide what you feel is okay, what's not okay, you know, and of course these things are situational, and it needs to be a dialogue. But I think one thing that really, really has been sitting with me is no matter what, you know, kind of across no matter what kinds of roles a non-Jewish person is playing, and I see it in general when an actor and specifically is taking on the role of any kind of culture that's not specific to them. You know, Robert Pattinson, you know, this British dude taking on a Queen's accent, like that's not his culture, or like,
yeah,
it doesn't always have to be so specific to like ethnicity. There's a lot.
It's funny how British people can do that,
right? Right, like,
but for white people, well, I don't, yeah, British people are,
hey, you know, like, yeah, then he's, I, right, was he Irish? That's, was crazy. He like an Irish Queens boy in that movie? I forgot the name of the movie, but I think people know what I'm talking about. But I would say, like, in this instance, like, if you're portraying a real life person or real life community, and if it's in the context of things like the Holocaust or painful experiences, you gotta do your due diligence of like what culture are you pulling from, because you are pulling from it whether you're gonna acknowledge it or not in your interviews, and people are going to use your example and apply it to how they think of those real life people, whether we all like it or not. And you could decide how much, mm-hmm, how urgent that makes the work, mm-hmm, that you do. But we just noticed there was a lot more energy that was put into defending why non-Jews should be just allowed to play Jewish characters than actually putting an effort to give back to the in real life communities.
And I think that, like, also, you know, people might be like, oh, well, it doesn't seem like there's a difference. But there is, like, there is a difference between, like, could it really hurt Jewish people as, like, being represented on, like, you know, TV and movies? Because, like, I don't know. I feel like we need to validate our gut feelings about this.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people try to convince us that it doesn't matter.
I don't think we took a moment to acknowledge, like, a lot of these characters we're even, yeah, talking about, or, like, almost all of them, right? They're, like, very specific white Ashkenazi Jews, usually from, yeah, America. Like, that does not... We're asking for crumbs here. Meanwhile, what really needs to happen is more stories that have a diversity of different kinds of Jews. So it's not even just about appearance.
Yes, for sure.
I think that's where I appreciate what you said before. It's about also a culture, because that's not specific to a Jewish look, because, right, Jews don't look one particular way and we don't all speak the same. So I mean, I think that at some point we want to talk about Uncut Gems, but in general, there's not many. Our representation is so limited that's why, like, this is an issue, but there's larger issues within it too.
Yeah, and it's like, and is that entertainment worthwhile? Like, is that accessible to other people? So I feel like once we get that visibility, yeah, out there of, like, that there are these multiple, we gotta push it out there. The thing about it is there's a lot of, especially women actors, I like, there must be, like, a lot of pressures, like, on Jewish women actors or, like, anything, like, just to be able to, yeah, get roles, and they're not getting the roles. They have to feel like they have to fit in. And then they're not also getting their own Jewish roles. non-Jews are getting casted for their roles. So,
right.
So I'm like, okay, how do we
help? So what do you do?
Yeah, so I guess I would love to know more about that, more about, like, how do we get more Jews casted as Jews? And honestly, genuinely, just in general, casted. Because I think that there is a gap in Jewish representation in not even Hollywood, just regular films. And I know people think that Jews run Hollywood, that's, like, an anti-Semitic thing. But, like, there's still, like, a whole casting process. There's still, like, there's probably a lot of internalized anti-Semitism that are, there might be Jewish executives, there might not be Jewish executives, but...
Yeah, that made a decision to say, no, I don't think they want someone Jewy for this.
That can be put through by anyone, whether they're Jewish or not. That I think that's why I'm glad this stuff is coming out. These articles are coming out. And I hope that we can, you know, our list is small, but, you know, I hope that you've taken away, listeners, some insight on it, right? It is what it is, right? We're not telling you to, like, go and hate these people. We support them. We love our actors.
To go throw eggs at Adam Driver's house. No, you could still love Adam Driver.
Yeah, we still love Adam Driver. Be skeptical, just like how all Jews are skeptical on everything, you know? It's not like we have to shut things down, but it's what evaluating, you know, the evaluation of things. Not judgment completely, but, you know, okay, we can do a little better. Can be a little more open. We can be a little more critical.
Even if people talk about, you know, different films that should be quote unquote like canceled, as a storyteller, I think it's always good to actually sit down with the piece of work and really decide for yourself. Like, really figure out, do you connect with it? Do you not? Like, what? Mm-hmm. And yeah, do your own due diligence as a consumer, instead of just if someone else says this is bad for the Jews and you're like, yes, this is bad for the Jews. No. Like, you could disagree with us or agree with the next person. So I think just as long as we're, like, actually engaging in the content that we consume, that is super, super important for just making sure, our whole society is just healthier.
Original music composed by Marnie Loughman. You can find their original and covered music on TikTok, SoundCloud, and Instagram under the handle @singing_Jewess.